We want to talk tonight, begin a new series a series of messages that I brought to you as Sunday school lessons some time back. We were first here in this building when I found the book by Timothy Keller, Reason for God, something like that. And I was very impressed with it, with the ideas behind it, and turned it into this series. God and the Skeptics, I call the series, and it two parts. Part one deals with seven skeptical doubts, and then part two will deal with seven reasons for accepting Christianity. You tear apart what the skeptic says, but then positively put in what should be. So that's the two parts. A couple of goals in this. One is, if you are a believer, consider these doubts. All about you in this world today, there are these doubts. There are people who kind of will smugly say, oh, you're a Christian, and you think they're saying you're a backwoods idiot. And you can smile right back at them and say, yes, you're one of those skeptics. But if you are a believer, then consider these doubts and let God's answers that I hope we'll be sharing build you into a stronger believer and a more mature Christian. I would like for you to let these thoughts run through your mind, to be able to think in these ways, that you hear these things, and instead of saying, oh my goodness, they're doubting the Bible, say to them, have you really thought through what you're saying? The second thing is, if you are a skeptic or if you meet a skeptic, consider these discussions as revealing a faith hidden in your doubts. The only way you can doubt a certain faith is to hold a position in a different faith. You must hold that position so strongly that you deny the other faith. So as I would deny the faith of an evolutionist because I hold to the faith in the Word of God, so the person who denies the Word of God is holding to his evolutionary faith or Buddhist faith or whatever so strongly that he says, no, I won't accept what you have. The first of the seven skeptical doubts is this one. There can't be just one true religion. If I remember correctly, Oprah said something like this on one of her programs when they were talking about this. And she was saying, well, no, there can't be just one true religion. That would mean everybody else is wrong, you know. Let's analyze this proposition. Three things here show why somebody would say something like this. First of all, it assumes that all religions are alike. If you ever pick up a book called Comparative Religions, and there's many of them, you will find that the attitude behind those books is that they're all alike. You can find the similarities in them, and at the heart, they are all the same. Secondly, it assumes that all religions evolved. Usually the books on comparative religions will try to show you how these religions evolved. And of course, then number three, it assumes that all religions came from man. This is man stumbling about in his world, shocked at lightning and scared of thunder and saying it must be God. And so coming up, evolving his thoughts. But ultimately, all of this came from man. Where else could it come from? A college invited a Christian pastor, a Jewish rabbi, and a Muslim imam. Sounds like the beginning of a joke, right? Christian pastor, Jewish rabbi, and an imam walk into a college. But they invited them there to discuss differences among religions. Each one admitted that there were irreconcilable differences in their respective religions with the others. One example was the person of Jesus Christ. So they agreed on this statement that you see here. If Christians are right about Jesus being God, then Muslims and Jews fail in a serious way to love God as God really is. But if Muslims and Jews are right that Jesus is not God, but rather a teacher or prophet, then Christians fail in a serious way to love God as God really is. You see, it comes down to it that all religions are not alike. That when you really know what they believe, what they are at the heart, they are not the same. And here in this one regard, and to us perhaps the most important part, the person of Jesus Christ, we see that they cannot be reconciled. They cannot worship together alike. These differences are not reconcilable. Several of the students didn't like that conclusion. They falsely assumed that all religions are basically alike, and everybody ought to just cooperate with everybody else. Otherwise, they felt, world peace would constantly be disturbed because of religious differences. But this is an argument from ignorance. Now, analyzing the proposals, if you say there can't be just one true religion, then there are proposals that stem from this. The first one we'll look at is outlaw religion. Let's just get rid of it. Well, the fact is, this is a very dangerous idea considering the times in history when this was implemented. The French Revolution outlawed religion, along with introducing Madame Guillotine and executing many, many people. Hitler's Nazi Germany sought to eliminate the Jews and the Gypsies and many Christian pastors. Nazism is notorious for its murder. But these pale by comparison to the work of the 20th century. Soviet Russia, Communist China, the Khmer Rouge of Vietnam murdered millions. Alistair McGrath, in his book, The Twilight of Atheism, page 230, says this: the 20th century gave rise to one of the greatest and most distressing paradoxes of human history, that the greatest intolerance and violence of that century were practiced by those who believed that religion caused intolerance and violence. We dare not enter into that realm of vicious and dehumanizing extermination. Outlaw religion. The fact is, you outlaw Christianity and every Christian will become an outlaw. He must. And you threaten him with death and he will become a martyr. Then, maybe not outlaw it, but a second proposition is condemn religion. The idea of condemning, we're right in the heart of that in a society today. The idea of condemning religion is to socially discourage religion by education and by cultural example. The result hoped for is for all religious people to admit that each religion is just one of many equally valid paths to God or to social good or something. Those who disagree are stigmatized as foolish or dangerous. This idea has worked pretty well in the Western world. Now, there are several concepts involved in this. First of all major religions are essentially the same. Think how this is being propagated. Joe Klein, on the Time Magazine blog, March 7, 2007, wrote that anyone who thinks there are inferior religions is a right-wing extremist. In other words, if you think that there are inferior religions to yours, you are a right-wing extremist. Really? Well, doesn't common sense tell us that the Jim Jones religion that ends up with everybody committing suicide, that the religions that practice child sacrifice are actually, in fact, inferior? Not quite as good as loving Christianity, for instance. The actual fact is, as we saw the panelists before, there are irreconcilable differences if you know what these religions really teach. For instance, Buddhism is at heart atheistic. It's not about making Buddha a god. It's all about how to live your life free from suffering. Doesn't have anything to do with God. Hinduism is at heart materialistic. What they call the Brahman is the all of the universe. All that is the material universe. And that is the God, but it's not a God. It's not supernatural. Christianity and others hold to a personal God who will hold people accountable for their beliefs and their practices. Where do those fit together, you see? Where do those harmonize? The internal inconsistency in the belief that all the religions are essentially the same is this: that doctrine, that teaching, does not matter. But to proclaim that is itself a doctrine. They're teaching us our doctrine doesn't matter. It's not significant enough to be different. But who are they to tell us that? This is a specific view of a God that differs from the biblical view. You can have all kinds of doctrinal things, but they don't really mean anything. That's the teaching, that's the doctrine that they are trying to hold when you say all major religions are essentially the same. Another concept: each religion only sees a part of the truth, but none sees the whole truth. They love to picture the blind men who encountered an elephant. After studying it, they came away with five very different ideas. The one who handled the trunk claimed that the elephant was much like a snake. The one who handled the leg claimed the elephant was much like a tree. The one who handled the tail claimed that it was much like a rope. And the one who handled the ear claimed that the elephant is much like a leaf. The one who handled the side claimed the elephant is much like a wall. However, that story only makes sense from the viewpoint that you have of seeing the whole elephant. We know an elephant is not like a leaf because we can see the trunk and the side and the leg and the tail. The skeptic assumes that we're seeing only parts of it, but he is not able to see what animal is made up when you put all those parts together. So the trunk examiner is the Buddhist, and the leg examiner is the Hindu, and the ear examiner is the Christian. Well, what kind of an animal is the whole picture? You see? The skeptic cannot know that every religion sees only a part of the truth unless he is claiming that he sees all the truth. That's the very thing, however, he's arguing that cannot be done. Internal inconsistency. Then again, it involves this concept. Religious belief is too culturally and historically conditioned to be truth. This is the postmodernist view. Postmodernist view of truth is this. All moral and spiritual claims are the product of our particular historical and cultural moment. Therefore, no one should claim they know the truth since no one can judge whether one assertion about spiritual and moral reality is truer than another. So they say it's like asking people from all over the world, what homeland is best? Their decision must be relative to their experience and not based on absolute fact. However, the claim that all religious thought is relative is in itself a very absolute statement. It doesn't say, relatively speaking, it's all relative. It says it is a relative. They claim relativism for every form of thought except their own. If cultural and historical conditioning make beliefs true only regionally and false absolutely, then this belief is also only regionally true and not absolutely true. In fact, this argument was formulated, preached, and rejected back in 604 to 517 BC when Lao Tzu preached Taoism in China. He claimed all teaching is false. Others recognized that if he was right, then his teaching must also be false. All statements are false must mean that that statement is also false. What?
Are you lying to me?
So, to proclaim absolutely that all religious belief is only relatively true, regionally true, and never absolutely true, is in itself an absolute statement. Then again, a concept involved is it's arrogant to insist your religion is right and to convert others to it. How arrogant you are. This argument assumes that no religion really is right. But if you grasp the idea that one religion could be right, can be right, in fact is right, then it's foolish to try to say it's arrogant to hold to it. My example I've given before, is it arrogant to insist that 2 plus 2 in the base 10 arithmetic equals 4? Is that arrogant? 2 plus 2 is 4. Can't I be respected if I feel it should be 9? Wouldn't it be more humble attitude to claim the answer is only 3? if we dealt with mathematics like they're trying to deal with religion, what would happen to our computers and the aircraft? And everybody's allowed to decide the results of arithmetic based on their feelings. It's not fair for it always to be four. But Christianity is different from all other religions because it did not evolve from man's thoughts. It was revealed from God. Therefore, it is the truth. And it is not arrogant to say that the truth is the truth. Again, since the statement that it's arrogant to insist your religion is right, that statement is a religious doctrine. It falls under its own curse. If that's a religious doctrine, then to say that everybody has to believe it is arrogant. It arrogantly seeks to convert us to its own version of the truth. The skeptic's faith is that his own belief is superior to all others. That all the others are just relatively true. Those religions must bow to his faith. Doesn't that sound quite as arrogant as he charges us? Another thought is this. If no religion is true, then we're not accountable for our actions. So why should the skeptic care if I believe wrongly? If there is no religion that's true, all religion is false, then why would he care what I believe? Why should he care if Muslims kill 2,819 September 11th, 2001. All religion is wrong. There's no religion that's right. So who cares? You see where that takes us. Well, there's another idea that they say based on this, and that is keep religion completely private. I don't want to hear it. This argument says, believe what you will, but keep it out of the public sphere. In the book Philosophy and Public Affairs, Robert Audi wrote the title of his article, The Separation of Church and State and the Obligations of Citizenship. And in the article, he insisted that comprehensive religious views be excluded from public discourse. Keep it private. February 28, 2007, scientists and philosophers signed a declaration in defense of science and secularism. It called on government, quote, not to permit legislation or execute action to be influenced by religious beliefs. Don't pass any law influenced by religious belief. Pardon? Oh, execute.
Executive
action. Legislative or executive action. That's right. This was at the time of Bush the Second. They felt that he was bringing religion right down their throats. Yes?
But when they want to curry favor, they say, God bless the United States.
Yes, that's right. Well, let's examine this concept. Is it possible to enter into public discourse but leave your religious views behind? Is it possible for the government never to base a law, legislative or executive, on religious belief? Some say they're not opposed to religion. They don't want to control religious belief. They just want to keep it in the private sphere. The secularist, these scientists and philosophers, claim that his moral positions are universal and available to all. while religious morality is sectarian and controversial. Well, the internal inconsistency here is that any moral reasoning has a religious base. Consider the definition of religion. It cannot mean a form of belief in God, or else Buddhism isn't a religion, because Buddhism does not believe in a God. Religion cannot mean a form of belief in supernaturalism, because Hinduism considers all to be a part of the material world. Rather, religion must be defined as a set of beliefs that explain what life is all about, who humans are, and what is most important in human activity. When you engage in that discussion, you are in a religious discussion. Explain what life is all about. So, if your religion is evolution, there is no afterlife. Therefore, the most important activity then is earthly happiness in whatever you decide to do. Some may call this a worldview or a narrative identity, but it is religious faith. Anytime someone says you ought to do something or you ought not to do something, that command is based on a religious value. The philosopher may call his commands pragmatism, things that really work, but they must be based on a religious view of human happiness and of human fulfillment. It's therefore impossible to enter the public arena and leave your convictions of ultimate values behind. Think of it. All marriage laws in the USA are based on the biblical model of marriage. Why not have multiple husbands and multiple wives? The only reason is because you believe that it's a wrong religious thought. What about laws about divorce? Should laws make divorce easy or make it difficult? See, that public debate is based on the decision whether it's better for a man to encourage long-term families or to promote personal happiness and freedom. That's a religious doctrine. All right, let's close then by looking at analyzing the Christian faith. Here's why we're different. Number one, Christianity was not devised by man. It was given to us by God. Secondly, Christianity was given not only by God, but by a compassionate God. A God who wants for things to be well with us. Three, Christianity works to the benefit of all men, even the unbelievers around us. Four, Christianity is the most tolerant of religions. Hinduism and Islam routinely murder those who disagree with them. Christians want to interact, become friends, and influence others to Christ. What do we try to do if a person is not a Christian? Murder them? Try to win them to Christ. Number five, Christianity is the most tolerant of those who are lost in sin, people who don't agree with us. Christians were saved from sin by being forgiven, not by being superior. They are taught to forgive as they were forgiven. Ephesians 4:32, be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Christians see sinners as prospective Christians who are unhappy in their sin and unhappy in their consequences. We are called fundamental Baptists. Do not charge fundamentalists with violence. That's a foolish thought, foolish statement. Because every version of religious thought has its fundamental and unprovable aspects. Every religion has its fundamentals. That's where you start. Even atheism, evolutionism, they have its fundamentals. The adherent to those beliefs believes these are superior beliefs to others. That's why he holds to his belief. So I'm a Christian and I believe that Christianity is right. What if I thought there was a better religion, but I'm going to be a Christian anyway? What sense does that make? Of course, I'm holding to what I think is right. So every religious person holds to his fundamentals. And then six, Christianity is the path to a superior culture. Go back in history to the time of when Christianity was first entering the world. At that time, the most open and tolerant religious atmosphere was found in the Greco-Roman, the Greek and Roman world. But that was open. You know, you can believe that, you can believe that, you can believe this. That did not make their culture from being brutal. Their religions allowed a great distance between the rich and the poor were despised. Women generally treated as little more than slaves, and slaves were nothing but property. And their open religions were okay with that. Christianity wasn't. Christianity, with its intolerance of other views and its exclusive concept of salvation by Christ alone, taught the value of human life, because every person would live somewhere for eternity, that every person was made in the image of God. It mixed in the churches men and women and slaves and masters together in the church, and each prayed for the personal requests of the other. It's hard to pray for the personal requests of your property. They expressed compassion because they had received compassion in salvation. During the terrible urban plagues of the first and second centuries, Christians cared for all the sick and dying in the city, often at the cost of their lives. You'll find a Methodist hospital, St. Vincent's Hospital, religious organizations. But you don't find the National Atheistic Hospital. That's not the way they go, you see. We Christians believe strongly that our beliefs are right and others are wrong. So how can such exclusivist thought lead to such sweet and open behavior? Here's the answer. At the heart of Christianity is the perfect Jesus Christ, who died for us. It gives us the greatest possible example and the greatest possible resource for sacrificial, loving service, generosity, peacemaking. Injustices done in the name of Christianity were done by those who had departed from early doctrine, from biblical doctrine and practice. That's where that came about. So we ought not to bow to this thought. There can't be just one true religion. Religions are a dime a dozen, but the truth in Christianity is one of a kind, precious beyond price. So let's think about the Bible. Read, reflect, repent, rejoice, repeat. Take that cycle around again. The Bible. Comments or questions?